You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to the first hour of the Civic Media Spotlight. Todd welcomes Cap Times Enterprise and investigative reporter Danielle DeClos. Danielle is the author of last week's article calling out Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction on some questionable practices surrounding alleged sexual misconduct cases. She has been following this trail of records for a few years now and is ready to bring us the facts.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Lovell Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 35 minutes now past the hour of 3 o'clock on this Tuesday, October 21st, 2025. Aaron Zommers on the board. Very thankful and very glad that we can have our next guest with us. She is an enterprise investigative reporter at the Capital Times. Danielle DeClos joins us via StreamYard right now. Danielle, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is our pleasure. Before we get into this really important story on DPI that you broke last Friday, and it's getting and well-deserved a lot of play, a lot of attention, as I think it should. But before we get into the actual story, we'll do what we always do with someone who is new to our program. Danielle, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and how you got into journalism.
Yeah, I grew up in Anchorage, Alaska, actually. So
really?
Not near Wisconsin. Wow. Yes. So I do love the Wisconsin cool weather. That's very familiar to me. And really, I got my start in journalism in my high school journalism class and went to the University of Missouri School of Journalism from there and then started reporting here in Wisconsin, covering specifically education in Green Bay. And then recently, about a year ago, I started at the Cap Times, solely focused on investigative and government accountability work.
Wow. Well, we could talk for a half an hour on just what you said there. Never been to Alaska. I'm infatuated by it. Would love to go sometime.
And I recommend.
Anybody knows, I was a comm major, not a journalism. They didn't have a J school at Platteville, but anybody who knows anything about journalism, Missouri is one of the top programs in the entire country and turns out great reporters like yourself. So congrats on that. And so how long have you been at the Capital Times?
Just a little over a year. So I started last June.
All right.
And really been enjoying working here.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Welcome to Wisconsin, even though you've been here for a while. Let's get into, and I've given my opinions on this in the first hour, a little bit yet this last hour on this story. You're not here for opinion and analysis. You're a straight line reporter. You do it very well. So I wanted to bring you on, first of all, to talk about the story that you wrote. And then if we have time, I want to give you an opportunity. Dr. Underley put out a statement on Friday in response to what you had written. And I want to give you an opportunity to speak to that if you wish. But first of all, let's get into this story and what led you to start. It was a year-long investigation, right? What led you to do this with the Department of Public Instruction?
Right. So this reporting journey actually started a few years ago for me when I covered a case in Green Bay. And when I was doing that reporting, I realized it was more than just one teacher or one school. I wanted to know how often this was happening across the state of Wisconsin. And so when I got to the Cap Times, I set out to answer that question. And so we went to the Department of Public Instruction to see how often they're investigating educators for sexual misconduct and grooming accusations. And that's kind of how this reporting started out. And our reporting found that at least 44% of the investigations conducted by the department since 2018 through 2023 had to do with accusations of sexual misconduct or grooming. And we say at least because there were about a fifth of those cases that we weren't able to determine the nature of the misconduct that was investigated. So as advocates and researchers said, it's likely an undercount.
There is... I've had other people ask me this. I said, hey, I'll ask the reporter. What led you to have that time period from 2018 to last year? How did you pick that time frame?
Yeah, so the records that the Department of Public Instruction keeps to track these cases go back to 2018 is when their like tracking sheet started. They obviously have records that go further back than that, but their summative internal records on case tracking started in 2018. So that was a natural starting point for us. And then through 2023 is really when we requested the records. That's how far it went at the time. And so we reviewed those cases. And obviously a lot of the cases from 2024, when we were working on this investigation, were open. And so there wasn't a lot of information available about those.
Well, I'll make sure that I'm getting it right and you keep me honest. Out of the 200 plus people that you found in your investigation, A, not all of these are what we consider quote unquote teachers. They were support staff, other people within that were working in school districts, correct?
Correct. So the Department of Public Instruction oversees educator licenses. So it's not just teachers. They also do teachers' aides, substitutes, principals, superintendents. And so those investigations covered a wide range of educators.
And second, the second question is that, again, keep me honest, these are not, you're not saying, or maybe you are, but as I read this story, these are allegations in some cases that didn't go to criminal investigation. And I'll use the term deal, that's Todd terms, that essentially there was an agreement, maybe that's a better term. There was agreement on some of these cases where there were allegations that the educator or the support person was able to give up their license in exchange for having any sort of investigation continued even before it got to the potential criminal level of a police investigation, true or not?
So to be very clear, we did not look into the criminal side of these investigations. This is solely what the Department of Public Instruction was investigating for licensure. So we were not exploring how far, what stages of criminal investigations that these cases went to. Some of these cases were a result of people being criminally charged. And so there was some of that, but this really focused on the Department of Public Instruction's own investigations. And yes, you are correct that they are allegations. They started with complaints and reports, and these are investigations that the department opened after receiving these reports. And you are correct that in the most common way that an educator loses their license in the state of Wisconsin is by voluntarily surrendering it. And that means that they give up their license and it wasn't revoked by the state. And in those cases, the investigation is closed and the Department of Public Instruction offers the opportunity at the onset of every investigation for an educator to surrender their license immediately and close the investigation. And the Cap Times found that more than 80 of the educator sexual misconduct and grooming investigations had results like that, where they surrendered their license.
And the story, again, we're talking with Danielle Duclos, the enterprise and investigative reporter at the Capital Times. You can find her work online and, of course, in print as well when it came out. But Capital Times or CapTimes.com is where you could find this story. It was first published last week on October 15th. I would encourage everyone. It's a long story. It's a tough read, I'll be honest, because, and I think appropriately so, you include details. I would say as a reader, I think it unfortunately drives home the severity of these allegations, or in some cases where there were criminal charges, I think it puts in context how heavy this is. And what I found, and for me, Danielle, what I just said, that's first and foremost the alleged victims, certainly for first and foremost, the most important thing that came out for me and most concerning point. But a close second is the fact, and you write in this story that you asked the superintendent of public instruction, Jill Underley, to be interviewed, and she declined. And she had her correct spokesperson do this. And I think that, to me, as someone who also remembers that she did not want to debate her opponents in the election for a re-election, the campaign for re-election this spring, she used to come on this program, Dr. Underley did. She quit coming on about 2 years ago. She doesn't want to come on other shows or this show on this network, and now she doesn't want to talk to a reporter. The lack of transparency, Danielle, to me, is disturbing. As a reporter who did this story, was that an obstacle for you to give the reader full context when one of the people isn't willing to talk?
I always want to talk with the subjects of my reporting, right? I always want to hear their perspectives. I think it's really important. That's why reporters ask for interviews, right? We ask for interviews because we want to be able to ask follow-up questions. We want to have in-depth conversations. We want to understand their perspectives. So it was disappointing not to get an interview with Dr. Underleap before publication. And I also did not get an interview with their head or former head now of the Office of Legal Services, which oversees the misconduct investigations. I would have appreciated that to get more detail as well. So always welcome the opportunity to interview people who are featured in my reporting.
And you write in the story here, quote, utterly declined request for an interview discussing the Department of Public Instruction's investigation would create, quote unquote, conflict of interest since Underly oversees educator licenses, according to her spokesperson. You're a true reporter. You also, I know you're not a lawyer, but good reporters also know the law. I don't see the conflict of interest here.
That's what through a spokesperson said. So we take her word for it and reported that we asked for an interview and that was her reason for declining.
Let's speak again, Danielle DeCloss, Enterprise Investigative Reporter at the Cap Times, this great reporting, disturbing report, hard reporting, but important reporting on the Department of Public Instruction. I think for me, again, as a reader, Danielle, the fact that you got this correct or incorrect through an open records request. Now, it doesn't necessarily take an open records request to get this information. Had you just asked at first and they said, well, no, you got to file an open records request. What was the process to get this information?
So I did file an open records request to get this information. That's typically
right off the bat.
Typically how I go about things and just get that process going because sometimes it can take a while. And so we got these records. Specifically, what we filed for was any internal like tracking documents they had on their investigations throughout the year. So they provided us a spreadsheet that we talked about earlier that went back to 2018 that had information about their cases that they had conducted, such as the date that the investigation was opened and things like that. And then they also provided a document that had case notes and summaries of the investigations from about 2019 through part of 2022. And so we relied heavily on those records because they're the sole summative internal tracking documents of the investigations conducted at the Department of Public Instruction. And so we went through by hand twice and looked at all of the investigations. We reviewed more than 450 and basing off of the department's own internal misconduct like definitions, whether it's like physical assault or, maybe discriminatory comments and things like that, we started to categorize the conduct under investigation to try to get the answer to that question, right? How often is this happening in the state of Wisconsin? And so we went through and coded those. And as, I mentioned that 44% had to do with accusations of sexual misconduct or grooming, but for about 100 cases, there was not enough detail in those records for us to be able to determine or categorize the conduct that was being investigated.
And Daniel, one of the things, again, as someone who comes from a family of educators, I'm only goofball in my family, did not go into that. There are the vast majority, in my opinion, of educators in the state of Wisconsin are fantastic. And I think the lack of transparency on the DPI side to what you just said, there might have been false accusations and these people were cleared. And the lack of transparency, in my opinion, only does harm to all the great educators out there. And I would think as a reporter, that also had to be frustrating to really have to kind of, my word, fight for that information.
Yeah, I mean, as a reporter, I'm always going to advocate for more transparency and access to information because it obviously makes my job easier and reporting what's going on a lot easier. And something that we did try to do is find out if we wanted an individual case file, how long would that take? And so we asked for 10 of those in April, and it took until September, over 4 months before we got those 10 files back.
We're going to come back and talk more with Danielle DeCloss, Enterprise Investigative Reporter at the Cap Times, on this story and what Dr. Underly said after the report came out. That and more is the All Balls Show on Civic Media's Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Last weekend, millions of Americans took to the streets as part of the No Kings protests. Across Wisconsin, Civic Media reporters were on the ground hearing speeches and talking to protesters. Cindy Greening in Eau Claire.
At this crucial time, our nation is calling us to service, to be the heroes, to make sure that our America is a country with everyone included and no one left out.
Chris Hornung in Wausau.
We have a government in Washington right now that's really doing a lot of unconstitutional things, from, you know, grabbing people off the street, putting them in concentration camps, just dark holes that they're never going to see the light of day from again, and this federal government under Trump and his people is ignoring the laws. They're not following the Constitution. And what we're here today to do is to let everybody know that this is America. In America, we don't have kings. And what Trump and his people are trying to do is establish that monarchy at the top of the federal government. And we're here to say no. We kicked out the kings in 1776, and we don't want to go back to that.
Judge and pastor Everett Mitchell in Madison.
Our legal systems are being retooled, reconfigured, and realigned to incentivize ultimate power. From the United States Supreme Court all the way down to individual classrooms, the war for civil rights is being waged all over again. So as we stand here on King Street, it reminds us that the Voting Rights Act, the seminal legislation that sought to protect my vote, the black vote, your vote, everybody's vote of the marginalized, is being sliced and diced from one justice to the next. And for what purpose? Yeah, you better boo about that. And for what purpose? If we think it is merely an attack on voting, you are missing the larger picture.
Neil Lubke of the Bad River Tribe in Madison.
In my country, we have no kings. It said when the water turns to poison and you can no longer eat the fish, a new people will emerge. It's called the Ashke Bamadazing, the new people. And that's what you are here representing today, the Ashke Bamadazing, the medicine wheel. There is no racism, there is no discrimination. You are all welcome to my country. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for showing up for this huge event. We are going to take back our country. Do it peacefully, gently.
Judge and pastor Everett Mitchell in Madison.
This is about power, about consolidating it into the hands of a few who can control the outcome before it happens. So this is not new territory, Wisconsin. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., in his letter from the Birmingham jail, offered an intellectual blueprint for how institutions consolidate power while people wait. Too many people are waiting on God, or waiting on Congress, or waiting on some celebrity to make a difference.
An estimated 15,000 people marched down East Washington Avenue in Madison, straight to the state capitol building. Throughout the state, protesters wore costumes and held signs criticizing President Donald Trump and his administration. For some, there were specific issues to protest. For others, it's difficult to focus on one thing. Peggy Hager in Madison.
It's hard to limit. I mean, it's what's going on with the immigration and ICE, and but also the shutdown and no movement towards any compromise. Lots of issues.
Speaking at the rally in Madison, Everett Mitchell had powerful words.
So this is the message I want you to consider. How are we using our time? Yes, time. Yes, time. How are you spending your time? Because make no mistake, our time is being stolen with algorithmic precision. Time, your attention spans, time, reading durability, time, the capacity to sit, think, refocus, and reimagine the world. Time is being stolen. The calmness that allows for creativity to find us, time is being taken away. And after scrolling for 30 seconds, it teaches a generation that if you don't want to face hard things, just scroll to the next one. While we scroll, our minds are being trained to forget. We scroll past the name of Detroit Reed hanging by a tree. Then we scrail to sea moss for bloating bellies. We scroll from hate groups invading HBCU campuses to plastic surgery knees of the Kardashians. And we're looking, hello somebody, all right. And the feed keeps feeding us. It stars the very story that we need time to understand. A young generation needs, it keeps stop scrolling, and they're being fed to do things like steal cars, because time needs them to forget who they really are. When we lose control of time, we lose our destiny. And while we scroll, the system tightens. The black unemployment rate rises to the level that it was in 1968 as DEI programs are being gutted. 350,000 black women have lost their jobs in spaces that were created to bring inclusion. And why is this the moment? Because I gotta remind you right now, Wisconsin, now is that time. Because if now is not the time, I don't never know when time is. So I stand with you this afternoon in the spirit of the black prophetic tradition and declare, now is the time. Now is the time. Now is the time for us to wake up, the time to stand up, the time to build up, the time to sing up, the time to live up, the time to read up, the time to walk up, the time to run up, the time to swim up, the time to laugh up, the time to cry up, the time to drive up, the time to preach up, the time to dance up, the time to rap up, the time to sign up, the time to ride up, the time to dig up, the time to build up, the time to hope up, the time to play up, and my God, the time is now for us to fight up.
Reporting around Wisconsin, Melissa Kay, James Kelly, Lisa Hale, Max Martinson, Isabella Nieto, Charlie Pittman. I'm Parker Olson.
For the third segment of the Civic Media Spotlight, we have Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. The families of people with developmental disabilities are especially worried about their future now that Republicans have shut down access to key government services and are making health insurance less affordable. Knowing that around 80% of women with some form of intellectual disability have been sexually assaulted, access to contraception and other affordable care is especially important. Pat talks to one mother about the real-life impact of the GOP's political games on her daughter.
This next topic is a little more on the mature side when it comes to politics, policy, and the real-world impact on people, and includes discussions about sexual assault, but also about the medical decisions that have to be made by families. It gets beyond the what I would say is just outright game playing that's happening in places like the nation's capital right now, where healthcare to some people just seems to be a case of numbers on a spreadsheet, and that these are very generic concerns. But when it comes to people, families with people who have developmental and other disabilities, this is no game. And we're not just talking about the medications that people need on a daily basis. There is, for an example, a statistic that says somewhere around 80% of women who have developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities, around 80% have been sexually assaulted at some point in life. And so access to things like contraception and the full range of reproductive health care services is vitally important, and yet is under threat in so many ways through Medicaid cuts, through cuts to premium tax credits that make health insurance affordable through the Affordable Care Act, and much more. It's these kinds of real issues that Megan Lowe has to deal with her daughter, Nora, and she joins us now to talk to us about that from the Merrimack area. Megan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. We're doing great here.
Good. And you have Nora there with you as well. Can you tell us just a little bit about Nora's story?
Sure. Nora is 17 years old. She has what is called Rett syndrome, R-E-T-T. It's a neurological disorder. It affects everything she does, but she is a 17-year-old inside. So she understands us. It's just her expressive language and her body control that really hinder her daily life.
Yeah, it's a case of, like you said, muscle control, speaking, walking. Yep. Seizures are a feature as well.
Yes.
And this is something that does not currently have a cure, as I understand.
Correct. No, okay. There are just ways to mitigate symptoms.
Mm-hmm. So that takes us to the need for all sorts of affordable health insurance resources. And mm-hmm. I am going to assume that you are not independently wealthy and mm-hmm. that health insurance and medications and things for Nora are probably a constant struggle.
Mm-hmm. We do have private insurance, but a lot of our private insurance they don't cover a lot of her daily needs. Those are picked up by Medicaid. Like her formulas, she eats through a G-tube. All of her syringes, diapers, wipes are even some of the durable medical equipment our private insurance does not cover. So I'm really worried to think of families that do rely on ACA. How are they going to get these items that they need for their child to survive on a daily basis?
Yeah, because again, so part of it is through Medicaid, and part of it as well would be through these enhanced premium tax credits. These are things that were added through the Biden administration and Congress 4 years back mm-hmm. to help make these plans under the Affordable Care Act more affordable. So between the expiration of these enhanced premium tax credits for the Affordable Care Act and the approximately $1 trillion in cuts coming to Medicaid, I can only ask you to speak for yourself, but how concerned are you when you hear about healthcare cuts in these two different areas?
I'm incredibly concerned because how are we supposed to prop up and support our state's most vulnerable people, especially when they are at risk of such egregious actions just by having a disability and being a woman. The fact that under the Affordable Care Act, birth control is free with insurance. There's no copay. If they let these premium tax credits expire, women will lose coverage. They're going to lose protection. I don't understand why they're trying to get rid of tools in our toolbox. As caregivers, these are off ramps that we need to have access to, and they're taking them away.
And doing so, again, to a population that was vulnerable to begin with, but as I noted at the top of the segment here, there is a depressingly large number of, you know, sexual assaults of one type or another that take place for women with developmental and intellectual disabilities. And so you had to have this very real conversation about mm-hmm. Making sure that Nora had contraception.
Yep. We spoke with her medical team, and they approached it as I was doing it as a caregiver to limit the number of periods or, you know, to make her care easier. And I said, no, the actual reason is because she has an over 80% chance of being sexually assaulted in her lifetime. It's 50% of having it happen more than once. That is the reason why we're putting her on contraception. And then, of course, sure, there's a lot of women go on contraception for other reasons. And those are just some benefits that we will see when she's on it. So we cannot lose this for this vulnerable population. This is just so important that we cannot lose this. We cannot lose the tax credits.
No. And for folks who might be saying, well, I mean, if she needs virtually 24-hour care, how is it that she's unsupervised? I can tell you, not just as a, you know, from a family standpoint, I can tell you from a journalist standpoint, again, a depressing number of news stories that have been done over the years of people who were, you know, violated by mm-hmm. people who were in their care for a short time or, mm-hmm. you know, an acquaintance or anything like that. So this need for contraceptive services is extremely real, along mm-hmm. with all of the other, you know, medications. And then you've got the nature of Medicaid itself, which in Wisconsin covers around 1 out of 3 births mm-hmm. to begin with. So Medicaid truly is a lifeline to all sorts of families around Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Without affordable coverage, women are going to lose their right to no-cost contraception. Premiums are going to rise. Women are going to pay the price. Women with disability, I mean, what are we going to do? We can't and at the federal level, as far as the special education, I just feel like this vulnerable group of people, they are just being forgotten about.
And I have to say one again, startling statistic that I was aware of being married to an OBGYN, and of course knowing several of them as well, is that there are at times one in five uninsured women who say they've had to stop using a birth control method because they couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. And again, that shouldn't be a thing, Megan.
No. No, it shouldn't be a thing. That is reproductive health care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Megan Lowe is our guest. She's a mom and caregiver to Nora. We're talking about how cuts to health care, whether it's Affordable Care Act insurance premiums or Medicaid cuts, are having a real impact on families and a real concern for families that maybe haven't felt the impact yet, but it sure seems like they're going to if this government shutdown continues on. Have you done outreach to any elected officials about this? Clearly, it's good that you're speaking out about this, but I wonder if you've had interaction with elected officials in the past and whether they share your level of concern.
Oh, definitely. Diane Hesselbein and Lisa Subek, we have been working with them for the Access to Contraception Act. The Republicans, they're not interested. This act would ensure that people have access to contraception and the reproductive care that they need. But it's not going anywhere because we know the political environment in the Capitol. So, I mean, people are talking about it. There is legislation. It's just hard to get things going down at the Capitol.
It really is. And we're talking about the state capitol here. You've had discussions, mm-hmm. I know, with Republican lawmakers. And I mean, do you feel like you've come away that they either don't empathize or maybe don't even believe you when you talk about your concerns?
I feel like when it's a face-to-face conversation, they definitely empathize with us and they seem to support us. That's why I don't understand the disconnect between the actual voting for legislation versus just the lip service.
Well, there's another topic that we hear about with that, and that deals with cannabis and legalization of THC and things like that. That's something that you're concerned about as well, from the standpoint of pain management and things like that.
Definitely. Nora and I are part of the Wisconsin Wellness Coalition. We're working with. We actually just worked with Senator Teston and Senator Filskowski. Their medical bill that they are introducing is really great. And I really hope that it gets traction because that also really helps women with disabilities, women and men with disabilities throughout the state. Again, it's our most vulnerable people in the state that seem to be overlooked. This is a safety issue. These people exist. They are loved. They are in our families. They deserve a place at the table.
And it's also, frankly, a convenience issue. Wisconsin is quickly becoming an island surrounded by states that have provided mm-hmm. some form of legalization, at least for, medical use of cannabis products. And mm-hmm. so there's a whole lot of Wisconsinites that face a very long drive for an assortment mm-hmm. of services and products right now.
Well, I'm a breast cancer survivor. I was diagnosed in 2023, and I have utilized our neighboring cannabis for my treatment and to get better, and it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I testified to that. I feel like there are a lot of issues in the state capitol that are, they have the support, the Contraception Access Act, cannabis. The Republican legislator is just not letting those bills come forward. And there is support, and it's very sad to see.
It is, because again, at both levels, at the state legislative level and at the federal congressional level, there are things that can be done. At the federal level, maybe not slash $1 trillion from Medicaid, and at the state mm-hmm. level, maybe accept the Medicaid expansion and cover more people so that they have affordable care. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, Megan, then, as people hear about this shutdown and they hear that it deals with healthcare issues like the enhanced premium credits for the Affordable Care Act, what is the ultimate takeaway? What is it that you hope people think about moving forward whenever they start hearing the news reports about the shutdown dragging on?
Well, when premiums rise, women are going to pay the price. Congress needs to keep the premium tax credits in place to protect contraception and reproductive care. There is no way around it. I'm not sure what we're going to do for these people if they don't.
Megan Lowe joins us from the Merrimack area with her daughter, Nora, to talk to us more about how this is all real. This isn't just some game that they play in Washington. It's not just some stalling that they do in Madison. There are real people and lives affected by this. And Megan, I appreciate so much that you were able to take time with us today and help share Nora's story and your story with us all. Thank you again. I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Megan, very much. Still ahead, coming up in the next hour, we will be talking to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets. We'll be talking to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO in Wausau. And, of course, catching up on the week's political news with Joe Zepecki. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
We're nearing the end of the first hour of the Civic Media Spotlight, but stay tuned, as Matinee on Air is up next. A man in Muskego used sidewalk chalk to post a message outside his local post office regarding his thoughts on democracy, and what followed was an investigation, an arrest, a court date, and another arrest. This story has flown under the radar, and Jane and Greg feel more people need to hear about it. So tune in.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matinee on Air. Jane Matinee, Greg Bach, our one, our only Cal Zone on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. This is an article from the Wisconsin Examiner, Mary Beth Danielson, with the byline. It is a commentary piece that says, is there freedom of speech in Muskego?
So interesting story.
It's a very interesting story. And we're going to include this in our show notes.
Yes.
So you can find it after the show is over. Go to civicmedia.us. Look at the top. Click on shows. Scroll down to Matinee on Air. Click on that, and then there's an archive about the last 2 months worth of shows. Greg puts together all the show notes with all the articles that we talk about if you want to read further. But I highly encourage you to read this article.
Please read this one and share it.
Jim Brownlow says he remembers that on January 6th of this year, he wrote with red, white, and blue chalk on the sidewalk in front of the Muskego post office, "Remember January 6th every November."
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks later, police came to his door. The property manager of the post office building, someone had vandalized the sidewalk, and he had to hire a cleaning service to clean it up. It was chalk.
It's chalk.
When the officers asked Brownlow if he had chalked the sidewalk, he said he had exercised his constitutionally protected free speech. He also said chalk can be washed off with soapy water in a broom.
Or one rainfall and just wait.
2 weeks later, a different officer called him to tell him to come to the police station to ask sir more questions. Brownlow said no, he was busy. The officer said he'd call next week. On February 4th, a new officer called. Brownlow said he'd already said all he had to say. Within an hour, three police officers and two squad cars showed up at his house. This is after he wrote in chalk, "Remember January 6th every November in front of the post office." Mm-hmm. That's what he wrote.
That's it. Nothing. No cuss words.
No swearing.
Didn't paint
it. No threats.
It. Didn't use a non-removable spray paint. This was children's sidewalk chalk.
Three officers and two squads show up at his house. Brownlow and his wife invited them in. It was cold. One of the officers said he was charged with criminal damage to property under $1,000 and was now under arrest and had to go to the station. Brownlow said he wouldn't do that without his attorney. He also said he wouldn't resist because he's 76 and doesn't want to break anything. Officers emptied his pockets, patted him down, cuffed him, took him out the front door, drove him to the police station, cuffed to a bench. They handed him a summons to appear in court March 12th. At that time, Brownlow said he wouldn't pay guilty and pay a $900 fine, so he was given a trial date in August. 6 months later, before he could submit a motion to dismiss, this Muskego prosecutor told the judge the criminal damage charge had been dropped because it couldn't be proven in court.
Well, Jane, it's over, right?
No.
Oh.
Immediately, before Brownlow could figure out what was happening, they turned around and charged him with disorderly conduct. Same moment, same courtroom, same incident, same judge and prosecutor. He has a new court date now of November 7th.
And Jim Brownlow, you're going to read in this article, is not a, he's not an Antifa.
Oh, no.
He's not a recluse. He is a man who retired within his career as a middle school librarian. And we don't have time to go over that, but the charges and the accusations people make against him for what he did, which once again was writing words in chalk on a sidewalk in front of a post office, all protected under the First Amendment, we thought. He has perfect responses to all of this. I really, really encourage you to go. In fact, you know what I'm going to do, Jane? I'm post this in the socials too.
Great.
Because we're talking about a lot of great things today, but I feel like that this article is a perfect example of people standing up for themselves and powers that be becoming scared and overreacting. I mean, this is time and money and energy. This is not just some like, oh, we're going to slap the cuffs on you. Take it. Like, he's in court. He's talking to lawyers. This is a waste. This is waste and abuse.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Again, what was the horrific thing he wrote?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote in red, white, and blue chalk in front of the Muskego post office. Remember January 6th every November.
That's it. Tell me. The people who dislike us, because I know you're listening and watching. And by the way, as always, thank you for giving us your time. You don't have to do this. Tell us why this is such a chargeable offense, why this is so horrific, and why you don't believe this counts as freedom of speech. I need to know this, because to me, it's these little things that are happening. People are getting, and these are intimidation tactics.
Without a doubt. And as you said, this is going to cost Mr. Brownlow money.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what they do.
Yeah.
This is how you go after people. You might not necessarily end up with them in jail, mm-hmm. but you can bankrupt them.
And also, from a municipality standpoint, it's also costing the taxpayers.
Well, Cassandra says, I can't imagine how these cops feel. What a waste of their time.
I know. I mean,
you send three officers there in two separate squad cars. Because he's a dangerous criminal?
He's a 76-year-old man who made the comment that he didn't want to resist because he was afraid he'd break something. First of all, kudos for the joke. That was wonderful. But this is where we're at. This is where we're at. This is how it begins. And I need to know from people. Email it in. Jane says at Civic Media. Tell me why what's happening to this man right now is good, justified, and makes us better as a nation.
PJ on the live stream says, this is one of those stories that shouldn't be a thing. You're absolutely right. News is coming up next, and then when we return, all the best commutations. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 9 to 11. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.